SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Preakness weekend. Absolutely a perfect anecdote. Not anecdote, but an antidote. There are anecdotes, but an antidote for the two-week Derby malaise, the Derby aftermath. This was very, very satisfying, I think, I personally. I mean, I noted that yesterday morning. Tina and I left Baltimore, actually went up to New York and went to the Yankee game, Devil Rays, but leaving Baltimore, I tried to balance the feeling that we had heading out, wrapping everything up, versus what we felt leaving Louisville, and it just had a much more satisfying conclusion. Certainly for the connections involved in the Preakness winner. Mark Cassie will join us in about 30 minutes. And the look on Mark Cassie's face, the I don't want to call it a grin, because grin has a certain connotation. It was a smile. There you go. It was a much more apt description, just the broadest smile possible, coming out of the tumultuous Derby, in some cases nonsense, that actually raised its head again on Friday with Gary West's silly challenge. Mark Cassie and Gary Garber and Tyler Gaffleone were pointed in their response to the Derby postscript, but they were also, very calm and measured, and set a perfect tone. And they come to Baltimore with a horse they believed in. And while everything is being focused, I think, on what transpired in Derby, and then the opportunity to come back and run and win. And you see and hear validation and those kinds of terms. But I think it's more appropriate to go back the full 56 days back to the Louisiana Derby. I mean, you're going to talk about the DQ and where Tyler was going, and really depending on what happens at Belmont, because it looks like, knock on wood, if everything goes well, health-wise, will be the only horse distilling down from 19 to 4 to 1 to compete in all three legs of the Triple Crown. But you go back the 56 days to Louisiana Derby, and we can equate what Tom Amos had to do with Serengeti Empress in a lot of ways to what Mark Cassie and Dave Carroll were achieving, getting War of Will ready for Derby and then spinning back Saturday. There's tremendous horsemanship involved here. To, you know, soldier forth after the, you know, the physical tweak, the, you know, the, you know, the little, just enough to, you know, to injure his chances to compete that day, but obviously not enough of an injury issue to, you know, sidetrack his interests, you know, through the gauntlet of the classics. He's going to be, you realize, we're going to get 3 weeks, 3 weeks from today, we'll be doing the recapping of Belmont. And, you know, I'm figuring that, you know, let's assume that everything goes well and he runs and whatever happens, happens, you know, in terms of his running. I don't even want to get into that topic. People are saying, well, if he wins the Belmont, it's going to be the greatest, you know, it's going to be the most outrageous Triple Crown situation in history. I'm not going to worry about that. But it, certainly you're going to be impressed and awed by what it took to get this horse from the A, you know, the post Louisiana Derby frustration, you know, to turn around and get to the Derby. I mean, so many people, that think back to that week. If we went, in fact, if we went around and gathered up Twitter comments and articles and everything else, they can't possibly run in the Derby off that. How do they go to the Derby? They can't go to the Derby. Oh, he can't possibly run. He'll never. Oh, he. Okay. Not only did he run, he ran well. And you know, there's just no there's no benefit to trying to figure out what the tie up with Maximum Security. There's just no way to know. The people could say he would have won. No, we don't know if he would have won. You don't know anything. It's impossible. It's impossible. That question was raised. We were driving out of Pimlico, and I was on Mad Dog Radio, and you know, would he have won the Derby? I no idea. And I you know, see what Mark see if there's any further thoughts. I know one thing Mark said to me yesterday was that he wants me to check with Andy Beyer, and make sure that, you know, do you think that was it just the length that it cost us? Mark's going to have fun with that with Andy. It was a tremendous ride by Tyler Gaffalione, and you know, whatever challenges the one hole produced in the Derby were put to advantage, really, on Saturday. You know, and obviously we had a perfect couple of days. It's funny how there was some rain both Friday. It's pretty funny, actually. The rain, knock on wood, didn't get in our way. It rained. It's funny. It rained Saturday night. For those that don't realize it, racing was over, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half, and rains came. But we had two beautiful days. Two perfect days, really, at Pimlico, and we'll do everything, obviously, here over the next 3 days, 4 days, in terms of recapping. But you know, starting out obviously with the Saturday feature and the Friday feature as well. George Weaver will join us after the first break in about 10 minutes. But a lot of the things that we expected in this running of the Preakness, it kind of came to pass. I mean, that extra pace pressure, that the addition of Market King and so forth, Warriors Charge, the situation with Bodie Express, which seems to, we found a new thing that fascinates the general public: loose horses. That's this week's fascination. Did you see the loose horse in the Preakness? Yeah. Did you see the loose horse in the seventh at Fairmont? I mean, yeah. Horses get loose. Some fabulous pictures. Chad Harmon's picture from the remote above the gate is pretty amazing. Johnny, a human projectile, and Skip Dickstein's facing the gate up the stretch with Bodie Express up on his hind legs. It's hard to know what a good break for Bodie Express would have done and how much more pace pressure might have been added from him, but doesn't matter. 22 and 2 and 46 flat. And Warriors Charge with just a absolutely tremendous effort for him to, finish within, three lengths and change of the winner after laying out those fractions. And he only gave it up late in a war of will. You could see the move up the rail, and Gaffleone much more, let's acknowledge, much more patient on Saturday than 2 weeks earlier. I mean, if you do want to talk about the Derby result, You could say the what if there is if Gaffleone waits another beat and the rail opens with Maximum Security getting out, then him and then he and Code of Honor inside and Maximum Security coming back and Code of the Country House, then the, you would have, who knows. Maybe we can do a computer recreation of that somehow. But in this case, Gaffleone just absolutely timed everything perfectly. And when War of Will burst through, and Tina said, "Who's that?" I said, "War of Will, he's going to win." And that was that. And 6-1, very square price. What a crazy board. I can't wait to talk to, to the various. Johnny will be with us at 10. Joe Bianca of TDN will be with us at 11. Andy Serling, and I want to talk to Nick Tamaro about it too. About the board was as crazy set of prices in a classic as you'll ever see, and that includes the fact that none of the outsiders were more than 32-1. Market King was the longest price on the board at 32-1. But War of Will, 6-1. Owendale, 8-1. Improbable, 5-2. Bourbon War, 11-2. Always Mining, 13-2. The confusion that we discussed all week. And especially, on Friday, where you really could tell everybody was like, I could go this way, I could go that way. I think this one's going to run well. This one should run well. Pace looks hot, but this really, it really got the result that was predictable in its unpredictability. One of the first people that I actually saw as soon as the race was over. And somebody said, "Who finished second?" I said, "Dale Romans." And there he was, standing in front of me. And I pointed, I said, "You're unbelievable." And I hope some people who heard him on draw day on Wednesday when we had him those last 20 minutes or so, maybe you were inspired to use Everfast. How great was that? Dale's, And I saw some really nasty stupidity midweek on the stupidity machine on Twitter, people taking shots at Dale Romans. Astounding. We've got another classic placement. And what, by the way, what a Saturday for Calumet Farm. We're going to talk to Jack Sisterson And if there was, I'm sorry, if there was a if there was a mystery, there were a couple of mysterious winners over the weekend. Lexingtonian is the weekend's horse that you said. Even knowing the result, I wouldn't have bet him. if somebody had come back from the future and said Lexingtonian's going to win the Chick Lang, you would have said, yeah, okay, I'll put him underneath. It was one of those moments where you just sat there and you said, oh, my God. And of course, it has to be right at that juncture that's going to kill all of your late multis. I was happy for Jack, but I was just shaking my head. I said, oh, my God. Amazing. Well, and not only does Calumet finish second in the Preakness, Lexingtonian wins the Chick Lang, and English B wins the Murphy. So a tremendous Saturday for Brad Kelly and his team. Let's take a break. We're going to talk first Black Eyed Susan, and of course Friday Covfefe, Brad Cox later in the show. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from EchoBase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races with a Licky Lee and waiting on George. We'll get some time. Yeah, don't worry, Jolene. It always takes a couple of tries for George. But that's fine because we can. There's a couple of things I can slip in. You heard me mention Okay, then let me, I will give you, let me see if we've got something amiss on the numbers, and I'll come back. No, there were no misses on the number when it came to the performance of Covfefe on Friday. I've been lucky enough to be at a lot of different venues. And there you go. My mistake, 650. Oh, there you go. All right. Number in the middle was, I was off one. There you go. The performance of Covfefe on Friday was just jaw-dropping. And everybody, I was up, I watched that in the press box, and everybody was looking at each other like, what did we just see? And I put up the Kirk Gibson, I can't believe what I just saw. It, because that's the kind of thing it was. And it, when I came back in from the little parapet there, the balcony where you watch from, and Jay Pribman was, you know, intently watching the replay, and I said, what do you think? He said, I'm looking to see if the timer got tripped before she crossed the wire. And he said, no. She did that. She ran 107. And I mean, they don't run as many races as they used to at Pimlico, obviously, but they still run plenty of 6-furlong races. And in 19 years is how long that record has stood. Northern Wolf, it was unbelievable. George Weaver is standing by. There he is. George, good morning. Georgie.
Hello, yes, I'm here.
George, I was just killing time talking about Covfefe on Friday. Were you trackside? Because obviously you ran a little bit later with the Black Eyed Susan, but what did you make of that performance?
Yeah, that was a big wow right there. That was a
crazy
wow performance. When I saw the final time, and I mean, she just opened up on that filly, but you can't, I don't think anybody was beating her on that day.
Unbelievable. And Mark Reed was bringing back his filly, Please Flatter Me. And she thought she won. She had no idea that there was a horse 10 lengths in front of her. That horse came back. Mark's horse came back, ran a 10-point new buyer high, and got beat, you know, got beat a pole. It was unbelievable. We'll talk to Brad Cox later this morning. He's actually on a flight right now. George, you're having a great year, and Point of Honor lightly raced, and boy, the upside just unlimited. You were also involved with Javier Castellano, who turned in a 5-win day. I mean, just tremendous 4 stakes. Talk about, you know, coming into this after the Oaks, you kind of regrouped and pointed for this.
Well, the filly, you know, the first 2 starts of her career were, you know, pretty exciting. She broke her maiden in an off-the-turf event, but she backed it up with a big win in Tampa. And then we went to, we were trying to get to the Kentucky Oaks, and we thought our best route was to go to the, you know, the Gulfstream Park Oaks, you know, avoid the ship and all that, stay at home. And it was a short field, and I mean, I thought there was, you know, it would have shocked me if somebody told me we weren't going to hit the board in there. And she just, you know, she got a little tight in the first turn, and the racetrack was playing on the front end that day, and she didn't get running until about 40 yards from the wire, but it was over. She finished fourth, and, you know, we aimed it for the Oaks, and we're hoping to get in, but it just didn't happen. So it was just nice that the Black Eyed Susan was right around the corner with a logical backup plan, and I was glad to see her kind of run back to the first 2 races as far as visually how she performed.
Well, and this was a little challenging in that, You it felt to me after the rain we had and the way the racetrack, you know, seemed to be playing that, you know, you you didn't necessarily want to be too far back. And for her to rally the way she did, and you know, then she really had to dig in to beat that Ulele for Brad Cox. You know, she might have been up against the track a little bit. Did that have you worried going in?
Well, it looked like there was enough speed on paper, and you know, it's this filly. One of the reasons we always wanted to run her two turns is she just seems like she needs to get up underneath herself. She's not a filly that you want to be hustling the first half mile of the race. You want to let her get into that groove, get into her stride, and it wasn't like we were going to change her style. I mean, I looked like there was enough pace on paper. I was just hoping to get back, but you know, in that final turn, as wide as she was, I was pretty concerned about that. I know that she kind of likes that trip. That's the way she won her first two races. And obviously at Gulfstream she wasn't. You know, she kind of ducked down inside there. But still, when you lose that much ground, it's hard to maintain down the lane. And so for her to put her head down and get the job done with that threat to her inside, I was, you know, couldn't be more proud of her.
Well, it's a big win for everybody involved. And as it happens, Eclipse, this is, I think I'm going to forget which one it was. I think it was with Todd, right? That Eclipse won a Black Eyed Susan.
I think so, yep.
Yeah, they won something. I'm going to forget. I can see her, but I can't. I'll have to look it up. But, you know, for you, this is obviously, you know, these big Saturdays, you know, the big opportunity. And you know, here we are, you know, approaching almost the halfway point of the year. We're still got another 5.5 weeks or so. But, you know, it's turning into a pretty nice year for Team Weaver.
Yeah, look, we've got a couple of real nice three-year-olds in our barn in Vekoma and Point of Honor. And it's just, we're just grateful to have them. You know, anytime that we've had a horse with some quality to them, we've always been able to manage them well, make them look good. But you have to get them in your barn. If they don't come in your barn, if you go for a long spell without having any success in some of these big races, and I think, you know, not maliciously or whatever, but people start to, you know, doubt that that's what you can do. And so it's nice to get the job done. You know, we work very hard, and we've got a great program, and, you know, we came from Wayne Lucas's barn and Todd Pletcher's barn. Both me and Cindy worked very hard, and it's just nice to see it come through in a big race.
Absolutely, and for Javier, who, you know, pretty much capped the day with this win. I mean, just the four-stake win day. You know, he'd also had that trip on Covfefe and started the stakes action with Chalon and won the Hilltop on Dog Tag and won one other. I mean, just a magical day. It was a big day for Curlin, too. Sons and Daughters of Curlin win three of the stakes on Friday, and boy, there's one entity that doesn't want to see Pimlico close. Curlin got his classic there, and the Sons and Daughters, whether it's on grass or dirt, they seem to like it there at Old Hilltop. Kind of cool. George, what do you do in terms of the summer now going forward? Is New York too much of a quick turnaround to come back for the Acorn?
I'm going to keep her two turns. I think that's important for her. You know, we'll probably train her up to the coaching club Oaks. I mean, look, I wouldn't completely shut down the possibility, but I don't think that cutting her back to a one-turn mile just doesn't seem to be, we think we have a good feeling for what she's good at, and so we're going to try to focus on the races that are important this summer, namely the coaching club Oaks in Alabama.
Very nice. And, of course, she's out of a Bernardini mare, so, you know, the 9 furlongs and beyond makes perfect sense. I get it. And, the acquisition, I know Sienna Bretter, what was the way she came to Stetson and Eclipse?
Well, Stetson originally bought her as a yearling. She, she was in the Keeneland September sale, and I think she was an RNA or something of the sorts, and a deal was negotiated after it didn't happen in the ring. But anyway, so Stetson owned him originally, and then after her maiden win, Eclipse was interested in her by the way she ran, and Mr. Conley, you know, he was he was open and willing to think about taking some money off the table, and so it ended up happening. It was, you know, I think it was good for all parties, and, you know, everybody's having a lot of fun with it. So, you know, and hats off to Eclipse for jumping in on her. You know, she, I'm just happy for everybody.
No, this was a nice result. I mentioned Ulele behind you, and much like Warriors Charge in the Preakness, Stanley Gold's Cookie Dough ran a courageous race on the front end and only got overhauled late by you and Ulele. And so that part of it, I thought I want to make sure, Stan Gold, nice job for Arundel and the Cheyenne runner. We'll talk to Brad later. Well, George, this is a great way to, you know, get through this second big weekend. While we're together, let's also catch up on Vekoma. What do we know 2 weeks after Derby?
Well, you know, obviously we wanted a better result. I don't think he was crazy about the track, and he's still, you know, like, he's a May 22nd baby. It was obvious we're not going to try to Preakness. This horse is not the type of horse to bounce back in 2 weeks like that. And we wanted to give him a little, you know, at least some time to the next one. And we've been looking at kind of the roadmap in front of us, and we're going to kind of sit on him a little bit and point for the Dwyer with him and then go from there. My suspicion is that he might be a better one-turn horse. And we won't know that till we get back to a one-turn race. But the Dwyer is kind of something that can launch us to go in either direction in the summer. You know, we could either go back to a route race, you know, or we could cut back to the Allen Jerkins, which used to be the King's Bishop. So, the horses are a very, very special horse, and we want to try to find a way to get him the credentials to be a stallion. I mean, he's got a following. I know everybody recognizes that he's talented, despite the you know, the funny way he has of traveling in front, but he, you know, we want to build a resume to make it good enough to be a stallion.
No doubt. And, you know, coming out of that, coming out of the weekend, of course, from Derby 2 weeks ago, didn't get a chance to talk, but how about Daddy is a Legend, you know, who certainly ran well in the Distaff Turf?
She did. I mean, she's one of our stars as well. And we've had a lot of fun having her in the barn, and, there's nothing wrong with the way she ran that day. She's, with them going, I think they went, what'd they go a mile in? 137 that day? I think the final time was like 137. And, but anyway, she'd like a little tighter than that. She likes firm ground. And, you know, I don't think her A race, you know, would really come under those circumstances. So for her to finish third that day and against a really, really strong group of fillies, you know, a comeback race, couldn't have been more happy, and we're going to run her in the Just a Game there, Belmont weekend.
Good. I was going to say, I mean, is the grade one on the table? That's nice.
Yeah, I don't see, there's nothing about her performance off the bench that would lead me not to want to go there. I love her at a mile, and I always have wanted to kind of, and you know, when for the three-year-old fillies, it's hard to really find mile races. You know, most of them are mile, 16th or mile and 8th, and she ran very respectably in quite a few of them. I think, you know, she won the Lake George at a mile and 16th. So, but I, you know, if you had to, every horse kind of has their, what you would consider the best distance, and I love her at a mile. So, you know, as long as we can focus on that this year, we will. And, you know, she probably won't be able to stick to a mile every single start this year, but the Just a Game was a natural next step for me.
Yeah, absolutely. How about Holiday Stone and Majestic Dunhill?
Yeah, Holiday Stone ran a big race at Gulfstream, and he's we sent him back to the farm. We're going to bring him back in shortly and look at the poker with him. You know, he's a horse that's always knocked on the door in some nice races, and the poker seems like it might be a good thing to try with him. And Dunhill, I think I want to find a little easier race for him. He's been trying to hook up with some wolves here, and he ran a real big race in the General George, so we were thinking we'd take him back to Laurel. Maybe, I think they've got a race there June 16th or something going 72 miles. So maybe get him back in a race where he can, you know, hopefully get back to the winner's circle and get some confidence going. He just hasn't had the race flow. He's kind of a closer, and he's the race flow. And at Keeneland, obviously, they went ridiculously slow for the first fractions. And then at Churchill, they went fast enough, but nobody came back. They just kept on running.
Well, George, there's plenty of action coming up, and look forward to the big week at Belmont, and much more. Point of Honor wins a Black Eyed Susan for the team, and you know, even though it's not you, but you go back to the Man of War, I saw a much bigger smile. I know Randy probably left Louisville a little downcast, but he had a big smile on with Channel Maker last week in the Man of War.
Well, I spent a lot of time with Randy at the races and on the phone, and you know, he had always been a little bit, you know, that was a purchase that they got involved with Channel Maker last year, and he had asked my opinion on the horse, and I said I think the horse is a very good horse, and I endorsed him getting involved with the horse, and you know, they went after some big stuff, and things just didn't work out. But I always told him, I said Randy, that horse loves Belmont Park. And those English channels, they just get better as they get older. And I said, believe me, he's a legitimate grade one horse and will, you know, he will show up for you. Yeah, I don't think he's crazy about the Gulfstream Park horse, but I bet on him there at Belmont that day.
There you go.
I thought there was no reason he couldn't jump back into form. And, you know, it's great for Randy. After all the races that we've won together and so forth, that was technically his first grade one win. Now, I'm not sure if he was stacked that up against winning the Bluegrass, which technically is a grade two, but at the end of the day, you know, Randy's he's been a player in this game the whole time, and any success he gets, he deserves. He's you know, we need more people like him in the game that.
There's no doubt. And George, as I let you go, Mark Cassie on the line. I didn't see you on Saturday. Did you get a chance to congratulate Mark? Oh, George. Too bad. All right. I was going to wrap up with George and add Mark at the same time. All right. Mark Cassie joins us, and he's got a slate of interviews, but I don't think you mind, do you? Mark, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. No, I don't.
Mark, there's so many moving parts to this. There's the post-Louisiana Derby recovery and getting ready for the Derby. There's the Derby. There's the mayhem and the aftermath. And, you know, then there's... 2 years ago, Classic Empire, and you know, missing by a nostril in this race. Gut reaction, you had the greatest smile I've ever seen leading the horse in.
Oh, it was a dream come true, Steve, you know. There's a lot of people that are in the horse business. I tell everybody I was foaled, not born. So it's been a long time dream, and it finally came true. And you're right. I thought it was going to happen with Classic Empire, and of course, we barely got beat there, and so that was a little disappointing. But we got it done, and hence the big smile.
Compare it to I know this may seem ridiculous, but compare it to the Queen's Plate, where you ran, you know, a number of horses in the Queen's Plate to break through finally.
Yeah, and it took Gary Barber to help us do that.
That's right.
So, you know, Gary and I have been very fortunate. We won our first Breeders' Cup together. We won our first Queen's Plate together. And now we've won our first Classic. And I mean, what a deserving man. What a great, you know, he's just, you know him as well as I do. He's just a true gentleman, and the sport is lucky to have him.
Well said. And for those that were looking around, including me at the moment, at the time, I found out later in the evening, where's Gary Barber? He's at the Cannes Film Festival. It is his business, and I'm sure he would have loved to have been there, but he was delighted, and I realized at some point when texting with him Saturday that it was about 3:30 in the morning in France, and
yeah, I don't think he got a whole lot of sleep because I knew he had somewhere he had to go at 5 a.m. But It was, I'm sure, you know, it was extremely disappointing for him not to be there, but as I often tell him, don't quit your day job. We need it.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, just as satisfying, you know, to watch it from afar, but the satisfaction here, and I'm trying to weave all these elements in, Mark. I mean, the, you know, the effort to get classic horses, to get, you know, to these spots and then win, but now we add about six layers of onion when it comes to what transpired these last 2 weeks and then the previous 6 weeks, because there were so many.
And then add a bruised foot in between, too. So, you know, he bruised his foot up pretty good in the Derby. It didn't show up for a few days, but... There were some anxious moments there, and he's just an unbelievable horse that is, he's tough as nails.
The ride and the trip and the anticipation of how the race was going to unfold, and of course, even the eye rolling draw moment, coming back with the one hole again, not as arduous in this race as it is in the Derby. But talk about this, you know, strategically, how you and Tyler were thinking going in.
Well, you know, I've always had this philosophy, and it's, not that I play golf anymore, but I've always said when you hit a ball into the woods, you can say, well, oh, damn it, I hit the ball in the woods. Or you can say, what kind of great shot can I hit to get out of the woods? So there's two different attitudes, and I've always tried to take the latter. So we looked at the one hole again, looked at what you know, we felt we could improve upon, and so we did. We changed a few little things. We warmed him up differently. We tried to keep him calm, cool, and collective, and even out of the gate, Tyler took a much shorter hold of him than he had in the Derby, and he relaxed right away, and that was the key. You know, that was the key to him running, you know, rating a lot kinder. We knew he had it in him. We've seen it. You know, I always say I love my horses to run. I like to get races in them. And if you follow my comments through the year, I would always say, well, he learned something today. You got to remember, not only did we get the one hole the last two starts, we also had the privilege of catching, I think, the 13 hole in the Risen Star.
That's right.
Having to win from that. So the running builds character. It teaches them things. And my opinion, Steve, if you can get them into a good rhythm in running, I think they stay sounder and happier. And he's a prime example of that.
Well, and that's part of, you know, that's part of that mentality that, you know, it says run them when they're right and you know, race more and you know, train a little less. I mean, that we think of that with cheaper horses that, you know, don't necessarily have to train as hard and you know, but basically can run on a regular basis. That can be just as true for stakes horses.
Well, you know what? Obviously, every time you go out there, you have a chance to make yourself look bad, and you're not going to be right. And you know, especially the more you do it, the less likely you are going to be right. I'm okay with that. I'm a secure guy in my, and I'm okay. I make a lot of mistakes. I always say if you do five things and you're only right one, that one can be worth the four misses. And so I'm fine with all that, and as long as the horse is happy, he's healthy, I think they run. You run them. Alan Jerkins, I was fortunate enough to be around him when I was younger, and he'd always say, I don't understand horse trainers. They want to give them rest when they're running good. Give them rest when they run bad.
Well, and also the great the great line about the jockey trying to rate or trying to hold a speed horse, and Alan saying, "I got a jockey trying to change 5,000 years of evolution."
Well, Alan always had one thing about him. He would entertain me. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many turf racing where one horse wins and six should have. Well, and let's talk about, you know, what you know, you saw, and how concerned were you early when, particularly with the loose horse. I mean, you were inside and he was outside, but nobody that's involved heavily in a race wants a riderless horse running around.
Well, in the beginning, as soon as it happened, my wife was sitting next to me, and she had a program, and I said, "Who is that?" And she said, "That was Johnny." So my first concern right away from there was that Johnny was okay. You know, Johnny is, Johnny Velasquez is a dear friend of ours, and so I was worried about that. I never really, for us, the horse never got into a position where he was a menace to us. So I never really was overly concerned about that. It's funny, after the race, somebody asked Tyler, "What'd you think about the loose horse?" And I knew the answer before that. But he said,
"What loose horse?"
Yeah, exactly.
The public is fascinated by it.
Aren't they? It's one thing about it. We've given them plenty of entertainment.
And an education, and I think it's I think it's good. I think it's great that people are like, "What happens in that circumstance?"
It's amazing. You're right, Steve. Well, you know, my wife and I went to late breakfast yesterday morning, and we spent half the morning explaining to people around us how it all works. and that's a good thing.
That's great.
That people are interested and want to know. So there's been. They can say what they want, but there's been some great positive things come out of all of this, and I think it's our duty to continue to try to better our sport.
I completely agree, and you know, with every you know, interesting wrinkle that with people tuning in, and you. The chance to intrigue them and just capture their interest, and you know, once they get interested in this game, it's pretty infectious. 22-2 go up and 46 flat. And were you concerned at any point that you were a little too close to the pace, or was the way in which he was going making it not a concern?
He can go in 46, like most horses go in 48. It's just, he's always been that way. So that wasn't a concern at all. I did say to my wife, I said, "Oh, the pace is good. The pace is good." Because I wanted there to be good pace, especially since where we were sitting. My biggest concern, I would say, was, you know, maybe the 5/16th pole. I was like, "Oh, please, just give him somewhere to go." I didn't want there to be another time when we didn't get our chance. You know what? That's all I wanted. And I could see Tyler waiting and waiting. And I remember in my mind thinking, I don't know. Javier was on the lead, and I don't know if he knew Warwell was back there. But I think he went out a little bit, because the rider will take their horse out a little sometimes to engage, and when he did that, he left just a little opening, and when War of Will got through, I think NBC had a camera on us during the stretch drive. I don't know. I have not watched the telecast, but we gave him plenty to see, because we were jumping up and down, and there was a lot of screaming. I wasn't cool, calm, and collective. I can tell you that.
You didn't have to be. And in fact, there's quite a few there's a wonderful video of
of Samantha. Or
Samantha, yes. Yes.
I mean, I can't watch it. The first time I watched it, it made me cry. Yeah. And she just loves horses, and she loves the game. And isn't that nice? Isn't that what we want to see? Young people loving our sport the way she does? It's a fantastic thing.
No doubt. And we'll talk about, you know, you got emotional later on in the day, but I want to go back to, you know, leading the horse in. We watched from the lawn with Charlotte Weber and Ginny and the whole win-win-win team, the Trombettas, and Charlotte had said that, you know, before the race, earlier in the day, you know, you had said to them, if it's not us, then I want it to be you. And that picture I've got where Charlotte's giving you the thumbs up and Ginny's pumping
okay,
a fist.
Now you're gonna make me cry again.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was so sweet. She was just, what a lovely woman. I mean, they're some of our, you know, they're not, we don't just train for them. They're our fans. They root for us, and what a guy, great guy, Mike Trimbo is in the Trombetta, and I truly meant that. We of course wanted to win, but if not, it would have gave me such pleasure for them to win.
Well, and they were just thrilled for you, and your face lit up when you saw them, and Tina's did as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
These moments are always special, and
I'm smiling, big smile now, just thinking about it. It's wonderful.
Well,
we got lucky; we won a couple of races for her yesterday, so that was nice.
Well, and I mean, speaking of wins, I mean, if it was a normal Monday of us recapping weekend, we'd have to go through a whole bunch of stuff, including Gary Barber seemingly as excited about Power Gal winning the Celine. That made me laugh.
Oh, Gary loves to win. That's funny.
Yeah, he good because I sent him a congratulations, and he writes back. You know, he wrote a couple of things about the Preakness, and he said, "How about Power Gal?" Like, you got to be kidding.
And then yesterday we had something happen, which is really, really nice, and that is my son plays baseball on a high school team, and their funding for their athletic program is pitiful. So I bought this horse, and I said to them, I said, we let the student body name her, and I said, whenever she runs, you know, we're going to donate 10% of her earnings to the sports program, and she ran yesterday and won her first start, so they made about $4,000. So everybody's happy.
Which horse? Westpaw.
She was a first time starter. We bought her. I bought her for $10,000. She belongs to my wife. She won the second race yesterday at Woodbine. So the way she got her name is Westport High School, and they're called the. I'm trying to think of the Wolf Pack. So she got her name Westpaw, and
well, that's cute.
Yeah. So it was a good day.
Well, and in addition, you know, you mentioned winning for Charlotte. You also that was Super Shenanigan, and you had Wild Medagliadoro break through at Belmont yesterday as well, and the Queenston too. Federal Law and My Silence are running 1-2.
Yeah, that was nice. I didn't get to see. I was on a plane at that time, trying to watch it, and. You know, I couldn't. It wouldn't stream very good, and the race. They were in the gate, and then the next thing it went out, and when it came up, it said Federal Law first and Mild Silence or second. I was like, "Whoa! All right,
all right."
I missed everything about it, but especially Federal Law ran very game because he had some serious trouble, and looks like he may be going to the Queen's Plate.
Very nice, and we'll start to look toward that. In fact, there's a bunch of Queen's Plate horses beginning to kind of bubble to the surface.
I have a really good horse for Gary Barber that I think, if he stays happy and healthy, he'll be extremely tough to beat in the Queen's Plate. His name's Skywire.
We'll write that one. That one we're going to write down, Skywire. And, Mark, I also want to circle back and let's do the tangential conversation about the Preakness when everything seems like a go and the potential for War of Will to be the only three-year-old to run the gauntlet here and participate in the Belmont.
That is the plan. We were hoping that Maximum Security was going to come. I read or glanced at something saying that I think they are going to bypass the Belmont, which is unfortunate for racing. I think if we could get those two back together again, that you know, it would be great for the sport.
And there is potential. I mean, obviously, it feels like the Haskell something that you know that makes perfect sense for him. They're talking Pegasus at Monmouth, and then Haskell. I mean, how interested are you in you know, swinging through there for the summer?
Well, I don't think, I don't know. I know that Gary and I have had conversations. Obviously, we're looking at the Belmont, and then after that, our main goal was going to be the Traverse. Maybe we can meet there. It would be a nice place. It would be, there'd be no home field advantage. It's a big day of racing. You know, Monmouth is, you know, Monmouth's their hometown. Of course they'd love to see us there. But if we're going to do something, like I said, we're not going to change our plans to accommodate anybody. We look forward to a challenge, but let's have it be, you know, right, best for horse racing, and let's do it. And I think if we're going to do that, I think the Traverse is the place to do it.
Well, I imagine that Dennis Drazen and Monmouth will they're pretty famous for sweetening pots and dangling incentives. So there may be some of that some negotiating posture that you might have to deal with.
Well, you know what? That's fun to look at and think about, and hey. I think Saratoga has a decent.
Oh yeah, they
have a pocket if they want to.
Yeah.
Again, let's just. You know, so many people want to make it about revenge and this and that. It's not about that. It's about doing the right thing. You know, we're very fortunate. And when I say we, I mean horse racing. There's been some rough roads. We need to take advantage of what we got now going on right now. And let's be smart. Let's do it. And a rematch would be a great thing. But it has to be, one, fair for both parties, and two, where it all makes sense. And, anybody that knows Gary Barber knows he's a sportsman, and he'll listen. He's not going to step away from a challenge. It just has to make sense. That's all.
Well, fair enough, and sets the stage for a potential matchup, and that would. That would also buy time for Country House to show up and anybody,
you know,
else.
Right. There's some other horses out there,
yep,
that deserve a chance, you know, too. It's not just Maximum Security. It's not just War of Will. I'm sure there's some other horses out there that Country House being one wants to do it. So, you know, if we're going to do it, we can have the rematch, but why don't we try to figure out who the best three-year-old in North America is at the same time?
And this, you know, where we are right now with the Belmont to run yet, and then, you know, the three summer grade ones between Haskell and Travers and Pennsylvania Derby. I mean, there's still a lot of sophomore exclusive racing to come, and you know, right now,
let's just hope. You know what, Steve? The biggest hope for everybody should be let's just hope everybody can be happy and healthy.
Yep.
And that's the most important thing. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but 3 years ago, I think it was, when we lost Danzig Moon in a race, and I used to always say good luck and everything. Now I just say be safe.
Yep.
I told every rider that went by, because we were in the one hole, and as they went out, I told them good luck, but be safe. And that was the most important thing. We need it, and, you know, just want them to be safe.
Regarding Gaffleone, too, you know, talk about how difficult this has been on him these 2 weeks.
He's a tough son of a gun. So I think I thought he handled it really well. Tyler's such a positive person. It's one of the things I like about him. I would say of anything that coming, you know, winning the Preakness and him giving, you know, the horse such a great ride, you know, given what had happened 2 weeks earlier, he could have panicked and done some things, but now he showed his greatness and his patience on Warwell. And, you know, there hasn't been much said, but the hole that was created down the lane wasn't real big. He came through you know, it wasn't nobody could say it was huge. And he drove him through there. And, of course, you got to give Warwell a lot of credit. Not all of the horses can do that or would do that. And Warwell, he is just, you've heard me say it a million times, but he amazes me, the horse. He just does. He was, what's interesting, I would say when we got him back to the barn 45 minutes later, he was looking, well, you know, it's like, is that all you had for me to do? Is there something else we need to, you know, do? He's getting where he likes girls a little more, which is a little bit concerned. He was more worried about, he was strutting around after the race saying, girls, did you see what I did? And I told him, I said, no, you have a little more work to go before you get to experience any of your new career. So,
well, the
I
first,
will say, though, I think his victory may have helped in the quality of the ladies that will be coming to see him.
Oh, look, anybody, if they're doing it, let's be honest, if they're doing it based on looks, there's no, we've been saying that since the trip to New Orleans. I mean, there is not a more just take your breath away specimen in this crop than this horse. I mean, physically.
You know, we call him Wow, but if you've seen his foretop there, we call him Fabio. He's got that long old hair, you know, that hangs down, and we had the fan on him, and it was blowing in the fan. And he's a looker, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to look toward the Belmont Stakes and a gratifying and satisfying conclusion to Preakness, second leg in the books. Not going to let you go without a quick glance at today's stakes action. People are saying, what? What do you mean? It's Monday. Yeah, it's Monday. They're running the Eclipse Stakes at Woodbine, where Super Tappet is making a return, the five-year-old for Mrs. Weber, and you're also involved in the Tom Ridge at Presque Isle.
Yeah, it's we don't have a whole lot of dull days.
No.
Super Tappet's been kind of a hit and miss for us, disappointing. One time I thought he was a pretty good horse. And he's shown some, every now and then he will fire something back at me that says, oh, yeah, he is what I thought he is. But he's been off his form a little bit, so
his one race he did run on the Tapeta was so good that I wanted to get him back up there. He's trained well. He comes with his aim game. If he comes with his A game today, they'll have to beat him.
Explorationist.
I should tell Mr. Oxley, you got me on that one. It took me a while. he broke his maiden extremely impressive in his last start and ran fast. In fact, he beat Super Shenanigans for fun, and then, of course, Super Shenanigans came back and won yesterday. Tough race. But he comes back with his last start. He'll run very well.
Explorationist from the two hole today, 8-1 in the Tom Ridge 7:30 start for the stake at Presque Isle, and at 4:10 Eastern for the Eclipse, the Grade Two, and that's actually a nice field. In addition to Super Tap at Avi's Mesa, Mr. Ritz, both for Josie Carroll, of course. Brian Lynch sends third day, who's 2-1 favorite, and Norm McKnight's got Decorated Soldier, and Roger Atfield, who had a hell of a weekend. Atfield,
yeah, he did. Good
how about
Roger.
How about Roger?
He did.
That mare is turned into a monster.
She has. Always happy for Roger. Roger's a true gentleman of our sport.
No two ways about it. And in addition to the win for Icky Masho, he also won the Louisville with Tizzaslam.
Right, for Chiefwood, which they have just got an amazing program going on. We're fortunate enough to train for him. I think I'm not going to give out any names right now, but I may have a superstar for them. I think young 2-year-old. Not giving any names right now, but I think so.
How about you, dangling?
Early indications. I love it.
And Geo Game, I should mention too for you. Geo Game,
good.
I thought ran better.
Yeah, she ran okay. You know, mile and eighth, probably a little beyond her scope, but she ran well. Yeah.
Overall, pretty good, Mark, yeah. And delighted for you and everybody.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. Mark Cassie, everybody, and the team that really we were talking about this two Mondays ago when we talked to Tom Amos and what he had to do with Serengeti Empress coming out of the Fairgrounds Oaks, and Mark and Davey Carroll and his team. What they did to get Warm Will ready for Derby, and then everything that happened there to turn around and win this and to go forward and make your Travers tickets. Get those Travers bookings in now. Get a place to stay in around Saratoga. Mark, we'll talk soon, and good luck today. Good trips.
All right.
Trips.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good day.
You got it. Mark Cassie, everybody, and boy, the soup to nuts of everything going on in that barn, and pretty good action today. In addition to Presque Isle and Woodbine, you got Hastings as well, and Louisiana Downs, and Parks, all the usual Monday Finger Lakes. But with those two stakes, kind of makes it fun today. Let's take a break. Just past the top of the hour, Johnny D is going to join us, and then Jack Sisterson. And it's funny because Jack had entered Lexingtonian as a potential starter in the Tom Ridge today, but I don't think he's going to run him. I'm going to ask Jack about that, because I think you can scratch the three out of the Tom Ridge tonight at Presque Isle. Yeah, he ran pretty good at Pimlico Saturday. Back after this, hour two, Johnny D next.